Hello and welcome back to Reality Check. One of the things that I've been told by numerous people, and it's something that I've noticed in myself as well, is that I seem to have a knack for talking and relating to teenagers. And as such, they've suggested that I should focus my efforts on trying to break into that niche. And I think that's a very good idea for two reasons. Number one, it seems like there aren't a whole lot of people that know how to get through to teens, and shockingly, this includes professional therapists. And number two, if struggling teens can be helped early enough, it will save everyone a lot of time and energy down the line when those troubled teens become troubled adults, which, you know, makes rewiring and retraining good habits so much harder. So, with all this in mind, this is my first podcast episode aimed directly at teens and the parents of teens, covering bullying. Now, right from the jump, you're probably thinking either, oh, this is an emotional topic for me, or conversely, wow, I'm sick of hearing all about this. I definitely fall into the latter camp myself, but for one very simple reason. Most bullying is simple to overcome if you have the right tools. If this topic immediately starts ginning up emotional responses in you, it's probably because no one ever taught you any of the tools required to resist it. I can't say that after this podcast everyone will be immune to bullying, because that takes a sustained parental effort and guidance. But if at the end of listening to this you realize that bullying is not some supernatural evil that forces kids to commit suicide, I'll consider that a mission accomplished. Okay, so first things first. We have to define terms. People tend to use the word bullying to mean so many things, ranging from "you disagreed with me and that hurt my feelings," all the way to physical beatings. Now, we need to narrow down exactly what we're talking about. And by the way, I'm going to address all this towards the teen audience, but I'm hoping, you know, parents follow along too. Anything physical, from pushing to punching to grabbing, all of it, that falls under the heading of assault. Well, actually, legally speaking, assault is the threat of violence, and battery, like assault and battery, is the violence itself. But for our purposes, let's just put both of those under the assault category. I would actually not even call this bullying, because it's a crime. It's an infringement on rights. This is a very important distinction, because so much of what we call bullying is not a crime, and it shouldn't be a crime, though obviously bullying someone is, you know, a huge jerk move. So if you've been physically assaulted, first, call it that. Don't call it bullying. Why? Because it elevates it to the correct level. People will take it more seriously and hopefully get you the help and protection that they are required to by law, meaning, you know, the police or at least some sort of school administrator or something. If you call it bullying, then you're actually downplaying what it is. So for the rest of this, understand that everything I'm talking about is non-physical. All right, so if we can take the physicality off the table, what are we talking about then? Well, we've got name-calling, attempts at public humiliation, cliquish, you know, in-group, out-group, exclusion tactics, and just generally being intentionally offensive to people, usually in order to get a rise out of them. Now, another important distinction between assault and bullying is that it's not about force, it's about manipulation. Why does that matter? Well, because it puts the power dynamic into a state of flux. Depending on the situation and how I react to it, the bully may or may not be successful in his attack on me. It's a mind game, and there's a million ways the bully can lose that mind game. Contrast that to assault, where if I'm smaller and weaker, I'm going to lose every time to a bigger person. In a physical fight, muscle determines the outcome, you know, most of the time. In a battle of the mind, though, everything is up for grabs. Alright, so the first thing to understand about how to combat bullying is that you are only as victimized as you let yourself feel. What do I mean by that? I'll use some examples from my own life. I was overweight for most of my life, so that's where bullies went for most of their attacks on me. Now, I knew that I was overweight. It wasn't, you know, some bolt from the blue to hear that. And I knew that it wasn't a secret. Obviously, people could just look at me and think, that's a fat kid. So when bullies would make up fat names to call me, or force some laughter at my way, or, you know, all that, I know that it was all an attempt to manipulate me using something they assumed would hurt my feelings. Somewhere around 6th or 7th grade, after having been name-called for about 3 or 4 years already, I started to realize that there were things I could do that had some profound effects on the bullies themselves. But before that, the first thing I realized was that words couldn't hurt me if I didn't allow them to. Getting to that point took some amount of personal discipline. I would routinely whisper to myself, you know, they can't hurt me with words. They can't hurt me with words. And that wasn't an empty mantra I was repeating. It meant everything to me because I knew it was true. So from that starting point, I thought, what if I outwardly showed that their words couldn't hurt me? And at first it was little things. When they would call me names, I would just smile back. I would hold eye contact with them for as long as they could stand it, you know, just smiling. Eventually they would get frustrated and move on to a better target. As I got more confident with that, I started playing with them. They would call me names, and I would say stuff like, "That one again? Come on, guys, you're losing your originality." Or, "You know what's sad? You're wasting all this time on me, and I'm completely unfazed. How does that make you feel, to be so incompetent at this?" It was like a practical joke I was playing on them. And the reason it was so effective was because I had completely flipped the script on them. They started from a place of assuming they had some emotional power over me. But over time, they started to realize that in this war they had started with me, they were shooting blanks. Nothing was working. I had won because I refused to play their game. And that gets to the heart of the entire thing. I chose not to be a victim. And in so choosing, I made myself immune to all of it. Yes, I didn't like the fact that I was fat, but I knew that that had nothing to do with them. They would have attacked me for anything. If I had braces, if I had red hair, if my eyes were too close together, if my ears stuck out. They didn't care what they used to attack me. They just wanted that feeling of power over me. And in denying them that, they became impotent. Now, I'm not saying that my experiences can be replicated in everyone else's life, because everyone's life is different in the details. But the core concept will always be the same. If you don't think of yourself as a victim, meaning if you don't make that a part of your self-identification, then you aren't one. Yes, you can be a victim of assault or rape or hit and run, but those things, and especially bullying, don't need to be a part of who you are. The last big thing to grapple with is this issue of suicide. Now, I'm not saying suicide shouldn't be handled with the utmost care, and by a professional therapist on top of that, but there are some basic principles that everyone needs to understand when discussing this. First, no one makes anyone commit suicide, you know, unless someone puts a literal gun to their head and says, "You're killing yourself now." When people take their own lives, it's their choice. And yes, I know their ability to choose is impaired, but that still doesn't make it someone else's fault. So when people claim that bullies drove so-and-so to suicide, that's utterly false. For a person to commit suicide, there needs to be a sustained pattern of choices, events, upbringing, etc., etc. It doesn't happen in a vacuum. It's something that builds over years, and it's never about a single trigger. Just because gay teenager A commits suicide when he's outed by others doesn't mean that gay teenager B will do the same thing if he's placed in the same situation. If gay teenager B had parents that raised him to be confident and resilient, it's most likely that he'll weather that storm. Does that mean that people outing gay teens are all cool to do that? No, we should publicly shame people that do that, regardless of suicide or no suicide. But they didn't directly kill this or that kid. Bullying does not cause suicide. Bullying can be a catalyst, you know, the so-called straw that broke the camel's back, but it's not the cause. The cause is mental illness, either biological or personality disorders. So the key to fighting suicide in young people isn't to string bullies up and label them murderers. It's to identify when a child is struggling with depression and get them help. Claiming that bullying forces suicide on others is elevating the bullies to this godlike position with vast amounts of power. This is extremely dangerous. If I thought that the bullies at my school could eventually force me to commit suicide, I would be insanely scared of them. Viewing them as powerless is what allowed me to conquer them. That fear is making people paranoid, and now we've gotten to the point where kids have been taught that anything that hurts their feelings is bullying, and thus, you know, is basically criminal. What effect does that have? It means that we've taught teens that they aren't responsible for their own emotional well-being, that if they feel bad, it's probably someone else's fault, and if they allow themselves to feel bad to a high enough degree, someone will come along and destroy their enemy for them. This means that we have people in a race to the bottom to see who can feel the most aggrieved and get the most sympathy. Obviously, this is disastrous for everyone's self-esteem. A good way to ultimately consider bullying is more as a force of nature, like gravity. You can be angry that gravity holds you to the surface instead of allowing you to fly, but what point does that serve? Gravity isn't going away. More to the point, we've evolved to make use of it. Outside of gravity, our muscles and bones wither and die. Gravity is the resistance that gives us strength. The same is true of bullying. Part of the effect that kids bullying each other serves is to make each other stronger. Now, I wouldn't go so far as to say that I'm glad I was bullied, but I'm certainly not regretful of it either. Bullies were just another obstacle that I'm glad I learned to overcome. And overcoming them made it much easier to overcome bigger and meaner obstacles later in life. And so now, looking back, I'm glad to say I've never, ever felt like a victim, and I never will. And you don't have to feel that way either. Okay, so that's the general overview. Now, I know some of you might be thinking, that didn't help me in my situation at all. And I agree, general advice on this isn't all that useful. Like I said earlier, this is the sort of thing that you really need personal, individualized attention to deal with. But if the only thing I accomplished was to get you to question whether you must be a victim to bullies because they want you to be, then I'd say that's the best outcome I could hope for. If you or your teenager would like my help with an individualized approach, please contact me. This, along with many other issues that teens face, aren't as scary as they might seem to parents at first blush. You just have to deal with them rationally, step by step, you know, like all things. All right, thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you again next week.